Hi, welcome everybody. Today we're joined by Brian Trollope, Managing Director of Dishoom, and Peter Davis, who's our Hospitality Partner and Head of Trunkmaster Services here at WMT. Today, Brian and Peter will be discussing how Dishoom adapted and coped over the last year and a half with the challenges faced by the hospitality industry with COVID. I'll hand over to you, Peter.
Thanks, Charlie. Brian, thanks for joining us today. For the few people out there who may not know or may not have heard of Dishoom, perhaps if you could just give a little bit of a brief intro, who you are, what you do, as a good place to start.
Sure thing. We're a restaurant business. We've been around for 10 years. We serve the food of Bombay and pay homage to the Iranian cafes of Bombay, which have always been sort of really democratic spaces that bring the food of Bombay together with people from all over the city of Bombay. Very affordable all-day spaces that just sort of help people to rub shoulders no matter where they're from in the city, which I think, you know, is something that's really important to us.
Yeah. And I mean, looking back over the last, you know, the last 16, 17 months, which have been very strange times, you know, it really does show all about people. You know, looking back to March of last year when, you know, firstly the government said, well, you can stay open, but people couldn't go out. And then the week later saying, now you all have to close. Just incredibly challenging times for everyone in hospitality.
Yeah, look, it was super tough for us. I mean, like everyone else, we remember spending days and days on Zoom calls when it was very new to us, sitting staring at screens for 8, 10, sometimes 12 hours at a time, trying to plan the world around us and figure out what we're doing to keep our teams jobs safe and to safeguard the business, and then waking up the next morning and realizing that everything had been turned on its head again.
Yeah, I think it was. I mean, it was incredibly difficult, incredibly fast-paced, and an awful lot of midnight oil got burned in, you know, taking the latest updates from governments and trying to work out, okay, what's this actually mean? How's this going to impact business? What can we do? What can't we do? And then trying to communicate that to everybody else first thing the next day. You know, it was as critical and as fundamental to them as well.
Yeah, look, I think it was tough. It was really tough for all of us. But I think maybe one of the fonder memories I have of that time and the way that everyone just supported each other within this industry. So we have people like yourselves, who are an enormous help. Kate Nichols. I mean, there's just an enormous list of people, actually. I'm definitely going to forget people if I try and list them all. But
just incredible. Don't forget to thank your mother, Brian, at this point.
Yeah, right. It was just wonderful in a way to see the way the whole industry came together, was looking out for each other, was just trying to make sense of the whole thing and figure out a way forward. And I think if anything good came out of it is I think the connections between the hospitality world are even stronger now, and we're even better at backing each other up and supporting each other and having one voice out there. And that's been a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things it showed for me, you know, hospitality on the surface is about food, but really it's about people. And it's about, you know, not only the people who come to eat and drink in hospitality businesses, but fundamentally the people who want to work within them as well. You know, and they're real people, and the concerns that they had and the challenges that they had and how this was going to impact them was completely uncharted territory for everyone.
Yeah, completely. I mean, our job is to look after amazing people who look after more amazing people who come in as guests, right? And that's absolutely true. I think whatever business you're in, actually, it's a people business. And if you don't understand that, everything else is a lot more difficult. So that's definitely been true for us. I guess we've got huge charity responsibilities. We provide a meal for a meal every time we serve a meal in the restaurants. We have that to worry about. We've got 1,000 really incredible people who work at Dishoom. Protecting all of those jobs was incredibly important to us. And then we've got some incredible guests who've supported us over the 10 years that we've been around and who use Dishoom as an escape from everything else that's going on in the world around them. And we just had to think about that a lot as well. So it felt like a huge amount of responsibility at the beginning, but hopefully we've figured it out and managed to crack it as best as we could.
As best as anyone could. Dishoom, I've had many, many enjoyable dining experiences at Dishoom myself, but one of your most famous or most well-known dishes is the bacon naan, which has become a little bit of a legend in its own right in the past. And as we went into the pandemic, this was a dish that as a business you started to offer to consumers as a cook at home or a finish at home product. Can you tell us a little bit about the thought process that led up to that?
Well, in honesty, it's largely came out of necessity, us not having any restaurants and us being pretty creative and wanting to do fun stuff when, you know, we didn't have any restaurants to run. So after the restaurants had closed and we'd furlough put on the table and we'd figured out how we're going to look after the team. We'd done some work to look after the NHS and we'd figured out how we're going to continue donating to charity. Then we had to figure out how to start getting a little bit of money back into the into the coffers. And the creative team, the rest of our team, you know, there are a lot of people stuck at home who really wanted to get out and do things. So we just started trying to throw around some ideas and figure out what it was that we could do in such a challenging environment. Delivery is one thing that we started doing, which I'll talk about in a minute. And then the other was we started thinking about which of our dishes people would really be missing over the time that we're going to be closed. Yeah. And which we could sort of put together in a lovely kit and get over to people's houses. And we landed on the bacon arm roll initially and the vegan sausage arm roll. We've got some amazing sausages that we do with Neil Rankin. And we started testing those out, which, I mean, just delighted all of us, right? We'd had weeks and weeks without the Shoom food. So yeah. We started sending test kits to each other's houses. Some of them exploded, some of them didn't. and eventually, we ended up with a kit that we thought was really, really just fantastic. It made us smile in the mornings. It cheered our days up a little bit. And we thought and hoped that it would be something that people would really, really enjoy. So we spent a lot of time trying to think through the packaging, how to get that to people's houses in a timely manner, starting to figure out what some of the challenges are of shipping things throughout the country and, you know, things not arriving and on time through different courier services, all of that sort of stuff. Thinking through sustainability and packaging and food miles and all of that sort of stuff. It was a really interesting time. And I think we ended up with a product that we're really proud of in the end. And that's done really well. We continued our meal for a meal donations through the Bacon on Roll kits. Yeah. Which is good.
Was in taking that step in moving, you know, not just into delivery, but into a, okay, we will deliver to you a product that you're going to finish rather than one that we finished. Were there any risks there? You know, any risks that consumers might feel in some way that it was not what they looked to dish in for?
I'm not sure, to be honest with you. I think none of us could visit restaurants. That option was off the table. Life for a lot of people during lockdown was pretty tough, right? It was a bit monotonous. It was, you know, the same thing every day. It was a little bit scary. And I think offering something that was a bit more of an experience where you could kind of get the family together and cook together and do something a little bit fun. And the end product would be something that you hopefully would recognize and remember as something you really enjoyed in the before times. In our minds, that was always going to be a positive thing. Yeah. And then it just really came down to making sure that the product was something that people could reproduce at home in a sensible and relatively easy way with a fairly guaranteed standard
product.
Yeah.
Deliveries as well. So, I mean, clearly there are the locations where there was already a Dishoom restaurant, but you moved down the path of having some delivery-only kitchens as well. Was that a conscious decision to say these are new areas that maybe we've already identified as being, you know, suitable locations for us? Or, again, what was the thinking behind the delivery-only kitchens?
Well, again, if you just think about the context we were all thinking and operating within. We had 1,000 people who we were trying to support through this lockdown. We didn't know how long it was going to last. There are a lot of people who, although they might have been okay financially, were really struggling being at home all day, every day, and needed to get back in and get to work. And we're doing some volunteering for feeding the NHS, but it wasn't enough to get a huge number of our team back. And we were in a huge hole. as well as a business, right? We're taking no revenue, really. We had to figure out how to change that and how to adapt and survive through a really, really challenging time. And delivery seemed like a really obvious way to do that. We had a lot of guests who could no longer access Dishoom, and we wanted to get Dishoom to them in a sensible way. So once we figured out a reduced menu that, again, we could be comfortable with the quality of at home, then really for us, we picked a partner in Deliveroo who we found really helpful. And we started with our restaurants, as you say, but they helped us get into a couple of kitchens. We started working through how to make those great working environments for our team. And once we got comfortable with all of that, and we started getting some really, really good feedback from guests on the delivery, we saw that people seemed to be really enjoying it. They're sending us a lot of love and brilliant feedback. Then we started to open a few more delivery kitchens, and they Deliveroo helped us to sort of understand where those might be best. And we opened a few of those. We haven't opened any more since we've reopened. We're now concentrating on maintaining the quality of the delivery kitchens whilst getting all of our restaurants reopened. But yeah, it was a really exciting thing. I think we're pretty proud of our delivery offering now. And now really we're just continuing to work on refining the quality, making it better and better, looking at the working environments for our team, continuing to make those better and better.
So in terms of those things, so for example, maintaining quality for the consumer, but also being a good working environment, how different was it in having to partner with somebody else for delivery only rather than actually having people within one of your existing businesses in your environment, if you like, in a pre-existing restaurant?
Well, the teams are our teams in the delivery kitchen. So we're not working with anybody else's teams there. So we manage them. We look after their day in, day out management. And we found delivery to be pretty receptive. I mean, the way that they work in many areas is quite different to the way that we do. But where we didn't see eye to eye on things, we felt, that they were always up for a conversation. And we just sort of keep chipping away at things that we think could be better. But in honesty and in fairness to them, they've always been happy to sit down and to talk to us and to move the dial on things that we'd like to be slightly different or slightly better.
And in terms of delivery, has during lockdown has been possibly the only part of business. Now that we're in a world where we can all go out to eat again, how do you see the future of the delivery within Dishoom? Is it going to be a long-term integral part of the business, or is it something that we did at the time because we had to, but now we're open again, it's not our focus anymore?
Well, listen, we're really proud of our delivery offering now. We're even more proud of the incredible people working in those delivery kitchens, producing those meals every single day. And I just think, A, we want to look after those people. B, we've got a lot of people who are really happy that Dishoom delivery is a thing. So we're definitely going to keep that up and keep trying to make that better, if anything else. So we're going to look to deepen that,
You do need to do delivery up in North Essex, Brian, in my neck of the woods.
I don't know how much we'll expand the business. So yeah. I think certainly we'll keep what we've got in terms of delivery at the moment. We'll keep trying to make things better in the way that we do in the restaurants and move forward wherever we can there. But I'm not sure that we're going to be looking to take over the world with delivery kitchens. And that's certainly not an ambition we have at the moment. So I think they are slightly different things. And I think it is important that where we have delivery kitchens, we can still get there and catch up with the teams and spend time with everybody. And we've always been a business that's grown relatively slowly, I guess, in terms of the number of sites we've opened. Yeah. And that's always felt quite important to us, just so that we could keep catching up with everybody, keep an eye on everything as we're growing, as we're moving along, and make sure that everything looks and feels the way that it should for our guests, for our team, and across the board. And I think we think of delivery very much the same way.
And in the areas where you have a physical site, do you think that there's any risk that going forward, consumers in those areas might say, well, rather than get myself all dressed up and ready and go out and actually go to a Dishoom restaurant and sit in a Dishoom restaurant, I'll just get a delivery at home instead?
Well, possibly. But honestly, I think they're slightly different experiences, right? If you're staying in and you're having a delivery.
Majorly different, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, that's quite a different thing to saying, right, let's get dressed up and go out and have a lovely evening out. And for me, it would be unusual to replace one with the other, just talking personally. If I'm staying at home and ordering delivery, that's a certain kind of evening for me. If I'm going out to meet friends or going out with my wife or whatever it might be, that's a very different sort of evening for me. So I personally have never replaced one with the other. Will it happen sometimes? I'm sure it will. Our job is just to make sure that both experiences are brilliant, and I think we'll be okay if we do that.
Yeah, I mean, I know some operators who I've spoken to have been nervous about the risk of cannibalising and essentially turning insight spend into delivery spend instead on that. But so far in the time that you've been allowed to reopen, you've not seen any evidence of that yourselves?
Look, it's really hard to tell, if I'm honest. We've got no tourists. We're all city centre locations. We've got no office workers, not none, but very few office workers back in the city.
Yes.
And things just look a little bit different to what they did previously. We're fortunate, touch wood, to have the restaurants performing pretty well, but they're not performing quite at the levels that they were back in 2019 in terms of the number of covers in the restaurants. So it's really difficult for us to tell where all of that movement's coming from, what's going on there exactly. But I think it's okay. I mean, our delivery kitchens continue to perform pretty well, and we're happy with the performance of our restaurants. Do I know that there's no cannibalization? Of course I don't. We'll find out when the world's...
I mean, in terms of people, you know, where you have sites obviously in city centre locations, and exactly as you say, there's far fewer people around, there's no tourism, there are far fewer people working in offices. Do you see that as something that's going to recover in the short term, or do you think it might be a more longer term issue?
My view is honestly that by December next year, we might have similar levels of tourism and office work, etc. back. And office work may never come back in exactly the same shape and form as it was previously, but I'd imagine that wherever people give up office space, it'll be taken up by other businesses. So there may be more smaller businesses around, which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing in city centres. There may be more residential in city centres. I don't know how that's all going to pan out exactly, but I do feel really optimistic. I mean, all you need to do is take a walk around London, Manchester, Edinburgh, Birmingham, these cities, and just look at some of the amazing things that have got these cities that are going to draw people back in. There's a reason that there are brilliant, bustling, wonderful cities to begin with. That hasn't gone away. I'm just thinking about how much I'm desperate to sort of hop on a plane and get to New York or...
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely,
or whatever it is. So these city breaks, I think people have missed them. People haven't been able to travel. They haven't been able to get to these incredible destinations. And we're really fortunate here in the UK to have some of the most incredible cities in the world that are so much fun when they're allowed to operate the way that they need to, and when people feel safe and they're sort of back. That I have no doubt that everything will come back to normal. It's just it's a when, it's not an if.
And
I don't know the answer to the when. But I feel confident that by the end of next year, we'll be in a really good place.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think the long-term future is positive. There's obviously a lot of challenges, and I think some of them are to a degree outside of our control on that. The issue that most people are saying to me right here and now is the biggest issue is ironically, it's not consumer demand. It's labour and it's staffing and it's being able to find sufficient people to run a business with. Is that a challenge that you're finding as well?
Well, I think there are a few things that have made reopening difficult for us on that front. One was we took a decision really early on not to lay off any of our team to protect all of their jobs. But we put a hiring freeze on early on just so that we could do that. And we really didn't know what the reopening was going to look like. So we're maybe a little bit cautious there because, again, we didn't want to take on lots of team members and then not be able to give our team members the hours that they needed. So that's always been a huge priority for us. And I think reopening, we're probably a little bit shorter on team members than we wanted to be. And then certainly the number of team members out there looking for work, there were fewer people looking for that than we had expected. So we had to work pretty hard on that. But I would say that, you know, it's cost us a little bit more on recruitment. We've had to talk to a lot more people, think slightly differently. But actually, it's been largely okay, with it certainly costing us a lot more time and energy and money to get people into the business and to help people understand why they might want to come and work with us. But so far, I think we're starting very slowly to move onto the front foot. I don't know what the change is going to be after Monday when vertical drinking is allowed again, when people are allowed to order at across the bar at pubs, whether people are going to keep table service, etc. So there may be a little bit of a shift around in staffing then. But I think, yeah, it's certainly...
I think a lot of operators who I've spoken to who had a significant vertical drinking part of their business before, a lot of them have been pleasantly surprised with how table service has gone. And yes, on the one hand, there is a higher staffing need to cope with that. A lot of them are saying that they felt that it's allowed them to run their business better. It's allowed them to increase guest spend as well, you know, which given the last 18 months and all the problems that people have had is not necessarily a bad thing. And many of them saying that although they're not going to stay wholly with table service, they do see that it's got much more of a future than maybe they would have thought when reopening was first, you know, first permitted.
Look, I mean, that all makes sense. I'm sure some of that will stay. There's still, I guess, quite a few people from city centres went back to cities that they were from originally and are yet to come back. I don't know whether they're going to come back to the hospitality industry yet, but I hope we do get a lot of those people back. And I do think certainly the government's going to have to take a look at making it a little bit easier for our sector to recruit people into it. So I don't know whether that's student visas of sort of 3 years, or four, you know, so I think that could be really, really helpful. If it's a year or a year and a half or 2 years, that's tricky, really, because it really does take 6 to 8 months to train somebody up properly in our industry. Yeah. We talk about our industry being unskilled sometimes, and I find that quite...
Oh, that's a complete, that completely misrepresents. I mean, it's a highly skilled industry. There's lots and lots of different skills that are needed, you know, and some of those are technical, like cooking, but a lot of them are personal skills. If you work front of house, personal skills are the most important thing you can have, and that takes time, that takes training to do. I mean, ministers have said, and they've said consistently to hospitality and to some other sectors, well, you know, with the post-Brexit, with the new migration policy and the end of freedom of movement, you've got to look more at the local labour market and attracting people into hospitality. Do you think hospitality's got a bit of an image problem in terms of attracting people who've maybe never considered it as a career before?
We definitely do. I mean, we've all heard people's parents threatening their kids, saying, right, if you don't do this, if you don't study, you're going to have to go and work at McDonald's. And, you know, in fairness to McDonald's, actually, the training program is pretty
good. Other burger chains are available.
Yeah, right. But I do think we do. There's been some bad press that's been justified, I think. So this, certainly over the years, it is probably true that there have been operators within our industry who've not looked after people as well as they could. But I think that's changed significantly over the last few years, where our industry is, I think, one of the most vibrant, exciting industries to work within. There are incredible life skills that people learn. People can earn incredible money working here. There are great career opportunities to move in all sorts of directions, whether it be finance or marketing or operations or, you know, chefing or a million different avenues that people can go down to end up with really serious careers that reward them very well financially, give them brilliant sort of social networks, allow them to enjoy their jobs a lot. So I think it is an incredible industry, but still slightly misunderstood externally.
I know from the work that we've done together, and you know, over the years when I've known Top, I know how much importance Dishoom places on its team and the environment and the culture within the organisation. If there was a single thing that you might say to other operators of things that they could maybe learn from what you do, what would that be?
Yeah, that's dangerous.
Put you on the spot there. I'm sorry.
I'm not sure I'm in the game of telling other people to do what we do.
No trade secrets.
But I think what I've seen change a lot over the past few years in our industry is I have seen a big shift from most people that I sort of talk to within our industry to make sure that it's a healthier one. It's one that thinks of people's mental health a lot more, that thinks of people's physical health a lot more, that does their best to support people a lot more and to make sure that we're listening and we're open and we're trying to understand what's important for the people that work with and for us so that we can make the places that they work better and better as we move forward. So I've seen a lot of that. And I think that's really, really positive. It is true that the hours can be a little bit grueling in our industry, right? We're often open from early in the morning to late at night, seven days a week, most days
of
the week.
And it's true that you need people to work at times that other people want to go out and socialise.
Right. And with that being the case, you've then got to figure out what makes it worth it for people, right? And that's going to be a combination of pay, the culture and the environment they're working in, the wider values of the business, I think. So what else are you doing to make the world a slightly better place? And can the people who work for you align to those values, whatever they may be? Because I think everyone wants to do important, meaningful work that is having an impact on the world around them. And if you can provide that, then you're really nailing it. And I'm not saying we necessarily do. We do our best. But certainly, I think I would struggle to tell anyone to do more of what we're doing. But there's so many great...
I think that's a hugely optimistic and I think a very inspiring and positive note to end on as well. After what's been a very challenging and difficult year, to be able to end on that positive note, like, really appreciate the time. It's always good to have a chat, always good to talk. Thank you for taking the time today and for telling us a little more about how you've managed to navigate the last year and a little bit of looking forward to the future. So very much appreciated. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.